two people walk into the same meeting. They have the same job title and the same qualifications. They both understand the problem, but one person speaks clearly and confidently. They identify the risks and they suggest what to do next. The other person is less direct. They use words like maybe and possibly, and their sentences don't finish with a clear point.
The person who can hold that moment with clarity, which is not to say they know what to do, but they can express themselves with confidence and clarity, gain some respect that has nothing to do with the stamps on their passport, but with how well they can engage and lead their team.
Welcome back to The Fluent Edge, the podcast for professionals around the world who want to speak English with more confidence and clarity. I'm Sean Watson, your English communication coach.
And I am Dr. Howie Jacobson, an author, a leadership coach, and a mindset strategist.
Today, we're talking about something I think about a lot with my clients right now. Why English communication is more important than ever, and why difficult, changing situations make it even more important. Decisions between different countries, problems that need fast and clear communication between cultures. All of this often happens in English. When the situation becomes difficult or uncertain, for professionals who can speak in an organized way and sound more confident, this is the way to go. People listen to them in a different way. So today's episode is about learning how to do exactly that.
And once you can do that, then that plays into what kind of leader you are. Because if there is no uncertainty, there is no need for leadership. There needs to be maybe supervision, maybe management, maybe tweaking at the edges. The definition of leadership is going first and ushering a group of people into the unknown. So the unknown is always going to be a part of it. But when the unknowns become stacked on one another, we still need a way to express clarity and to shepherd processes of decision making, even in the face of all that uncertainty, without engendering more doubt and even pessimism, to be able to hold a positive future, even in the face of all that unknown.
And the reason this matters specifically for our listeners, professionals working in English as their second or third language, is that the pressure of a volatile environment often impacts your language first. And what we're going to explore today, how to stay structured and how to sound professional in English, especially when the situation makes this most difficult.
So as someone who works with people around business English, or professional English, when some major disruption hits, a regulatory shock, a technology shift, a market reversal, what happens with your executives and senior professionals with their English communication? What do you see changing?
I work with several people who are very senior and very good at speaking in their own language. When the situation is normal and easy to predict, their English is usually clear and confident. But I see the same thing happening again and again. When there's a crisis or a big problem, they sometimes tell me that their English changes. They start adding words like maybe, perhaps, possibly, I'm not sure. And I think they use these words because they want to be safe. They don't want to be wrong. When there's pressure, people who speak English as a second language don't forget their words necessarily, but they lose their structure. They don't say their main idea first. They hide their conclusion behind too many conditions. This is exactly the wrong thing to do. When the situation is challenging, your audience needs more clarity, not less. So they need someone to help them understand the confusion. They don't want someone who is also confused. So the big question is, how can we stay clear and direct when we really don't have all the answers? Howie, is there a psychological mechanism behind this? What's happening to these people when this happens?
Pressure always reverts you to your default. So if you wake up from a nightmare in the middle of the night, you might speak your childhood language, even if you haven't spoken it for decades. So that's one thing. So if the default is a different language and all of a sudden you have to start translating again instead of just speaking from the well of your English, I imagine that's a piece of it. There's a bigger issue here that I wanted to make sure we started with as context, which is there are different ways of responding to uncertainty and there are different tools and they might have different cultural values attached to them. I always work with people on a SWOT analysis, which stands for strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, threats. It's a very neutral square with four equal squares. And the idea is that weaknesses and threats are two of the boxes, and they're not considered dangerous. If you had a SWOT analysis and it only had strengths and opportunities, you would be worried. because you would think whoever put this together is not looking at the full picture. There's other tools. There's decision-making tools. There's tools taught by professional poker players to minimize risk or to figure out, are we going for risk minimization? Are we going to really aim high?
Mm-hmm.
And that is different from communication. And it's also different from cultural sensitivity. I want to make sure that when we talk about how to speak well under uncertainty and how to lead in uncertainty, that we're considering all of those. What's the process, the technique, the tool that you want to use? What's the cultural milieu? And then what are the words you're going to use to guide the team through this one particular tool?
When hedging words are used, what they actually sound like and what they could cost you. So again, I'll just give examples of words like perhaps, maybe, I think possibly. When we use too many of them together, they also change how you sound. So your voice sometimes gets quieter. Sometimes your pitch goes up when you're speaking. You've talked about this a little bit in the past, Howie, about when people are tense or the voice kind of gets higher or they start speaking faster. So your whole way of speaking changes and the audience notices this feeling before they even think about your words. So the words you use to sound careful, they could be creating the opposite effect.
Mm-hmm. There are words that we need to watch out for, but the words come from an energy. And I would want people to focus on the energy first and the words second, because there are things you could say in both scenarios that would come across totally differently. Like you could say, I don't know. And I don't know could be a sign for everyone to start screaming and panicking. Or it could be a trust builder, where if someone says, okay, this leader is not going to lie to us. They're not hiding anything. They're being completely open. So for me, the energy is based on the answer to a very simple question. Can I handle this? And if there's uncertainty and everything's falling apart, and you say, you know what? Whatever it is, whether you think of it as this is the moment that tests me, this is what I've been preparing my whole life for, this is a real pity, but there's nobody else at the helm but me. Whatever the energy you bring to it, as long as I'm here for it and whatever happens, I can handle it. Then your words come out with a different energy. And then we can talk about phrasing that supports that and brings other people into the structure of support and response.
And speaking of structure, when things are uncertain, the language of control should have a specific structure. It uses what I call the three-frame structure. So first, say what's true, say what's actually going on. And second, you could say what you don't know. And third, say what you're doing next. That structure gives your audience something clear to follow, even when the full picture isn't available. And I think the vocabulary matters too. There's a big difference between saying, we don't know, and saying that remains to be seen. It's the same information, but there's a different tone to each, right?
Yeah. Sometimes they're identical and sometimes they're not, because sometimes we may never know. We may have to make this decision and we don't know what they're thinking over there. And they're playing their cards close to their chest, throwing a nice poker metaphor.
Yeah.
And we are going to have to make this decision under uncertainty, and it may never be revealed. Again, you could say, yeah, I wish I knew what they were thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can say, we don't know what's on their mind. So when you said what's true, what we don't know, sometimes those are the same thing.
Yeah.
Right. But to be able to say, here's where things are at. They are not telling us what they're thinking. Now, I have some ideas, or the board has put together a scenario, or, mm-hmm. And the way I like to work as a leader is to get a panoramic view, because I only have two eyes and they generally look forward, to find out from everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to hear, what are your thoughts about what could be driving their behavior? What could be driving their decisions? What have we not thought about? So maybe to fill out that SWOT analysis or another tool, if the what next sometimes is, here's what we've decided,
mm-hmm.
I like it better when the what next is, let's gather information together. Let us put our heads together.
Mm-hmm.
Let's evaluate risk. Let's evaluate opportunity. Be very clear. This decision is mine. I have to make it. And I don't want to make it without listening to the wisdom in this room. To me, that feels confident and confidence inspiring, even as it says, I don't know right now. So let's get specific. People have told us they love when we provide examples and templates of things to say, things to practice. Mm-hmm. So you work with professionals who need to communicate through volatile or situations every week. Mm-hmm. So what do you see are the language and delivery patterns that are most effective? What does it sound like?
In a volatile situation, information can be overwhelming for everybody, and a confident and organized leader tries to choose the most essential information. So if they walk into the room and they say, three things are important in the next 90 days, let me start with the most important one. So they don't try to say everything. They focus on what the audience or what the employees or stakeholders need to hear most. And then secondly, they talk about different possibilities in the clearest way possible. So they use if, then sentences, conditional sentences, right? So if X happens, we will do Y. And if Z happens, we will do W. And I think this way of speaking tells people that I already thought about different situations. I have a plan for each one. And third, organized and confident leaders are disciplined about what they don't say. So under pressure, I think there's an impulse to fill every gap with words. And strategic communicators try to resist that. So they're more comfortable with brief, intentional silence. And I know we've talked quite a bit about this idea of creating intentional silence.
And again, it comes from a mindset rather than mimicking words because Sean has said you need to say them. Right. So if the mindset is we've made a decision and it was made under uncertainty and we need to communicate it, then that becomes the goal. If it's I want to gather people's opinions and see what they're seeing and gain a panoramic perspective, mm-hmm. then that becomes it. But it's coming in with clarity. Right. As you said, like the first few seconds are important. Mm-hmm. The first impression is going to be important. If you get up, you stand up and say, ladies and gentlemen, we are facing our biggest financial crisis since this company started. That could sound terrible. Mm-hmm. But if you stand up like that and say, here are the facts, you're already giving off the energy that there's a reason for us being here to do something about it, as mm-hmm. opposed to, well, this last quarter hasn't been great, as some of you know. In fact, they just took my house and, right? So coming in strong is more important than the details of what you're saying, mm-hmm. but you also want to be saying things in a way that makes them solvable. Mm-hmm.
Strategic agility is a phrase I'm hearing a lot these days. What does a leader with genuine strategic agility actually look like in a meeting? And what's the behavioral signature? And how is it different from someone who's just performing adaptability?
Yeah, I read this question in the prep notes for this, and I was really excited to find out what I was going to say in response. I thought, this is a wonderful question.
Okay.
And I'm going to see what comes up. The first thing that comes up for me is the word adventure. So I have a friend in town here who's a surfer, and it's the Mediterranean, so it's not exactly the blue crush of Hawaii, but there's still waves sometimes, and I see mm-hmm. people wipe out, and I see people struggle. He says, when you're surfing, you're always remembering that you got on the surfboard and went out there. You're not the victim here. You volunteered for this. And so when the big wave comes that might be a little bigger than you've ever surfed before, part of you keeps in mind that this is why I'm here. So for strategic agility, it's the knowledge that things are always going to change. The knowledge that if things were predictable, you wouldn't be that important. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't be that needed. Your experience wouldn't matter that much. Your nervous system regulation wouldn't be crucial, but it is because of the volatility. And of course, no one says, dear Lord, please teach me something today in a painful way, right? That's mm-hmm. that's not a prayer that people generally say. But when it comes, there's an old Yiddish expression that I like. It says, burdens are from God and shoulders are too, meaning that this is why you're here. So to be strategically agile means that you're expecting it mm-hmm. and some part of you is chomping at the bit. There's a nice—
There's a good expression.
Horse metaphor, I think.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Is chomping at the bit to see who you are in the face of it, because crises will teach you about yourself in ways that calm days will not.
Right. I'm also reminded of that saying, don't pray for an easy life, pray to be a strong person.
Yeah, I've heard the expression, smooth seas never made a good sailor.
Lovely.
The same idea.
Uh-huh. So in some cultures, it can be risky to say directly that you're uncertain or that you don't have all the information during a crisis. And in North American business culture, I think being direct like this is often seen as a positive thing. So how do leaders from different backgrounds handle this difference? And how can they be honest about uncertainty without losing respect?
I think the answer to that is probably in the preparation for it, in the conversations that ask that question. Right? If before there's a crisis, if someone stands up in the room and says exactly what you said, we have different cultures here. We have different ways of relating. I've been talking to several Dutch people lately, and they're very self-aware. They're like, yeah, everyone thinks we're rude. I don't understand why we can't just say what's on our mind, have it out, and then just move on. But other people don't like that.
Yeah.
But when that conversation happens first, and we say, this is a dynamic, there are strengths to both positions, there are potential pitfalls to each of them, let's talk now about our rules of engagement, about what it's like, about what you need. Teach me how to help you save face, and I'll teach you how to stand up and be bold, or vice versa. And I think naming it, especially in a multicultural environment, and expecting it and preparing for it is more important than having the one answer that we're going to give to everyone.
From the language side, you do have choices. Obviously, in any language, there is nuance. You have choices about how to say things. And if saying, I don't know, in some cultural contexts feels too direct or uncomfortable, there are other phrases that are honest but sound more professional. Like, for example, in English, you could say, we're still gathering information on that. Or right now, I think X is true, but I'm open to changing my view as we learn more. This shows you have a position now, and it also shows that you're willing to change it when you get new information.
Right. So a lot of my decision-making, the teachings that I do come from a professor, Annie Duke, who is also a professional poker player. And she wrote a book called Thinking in Bets. When you're playing poker, you always have to make high stakes decisions under pressure with incomplete information. And so one of the things she encourages people to do is to put a number behind their confidence. Right. So when you say, I think this is true currently, but I'm open to change my mind, a company-wide policy could be when you are presenting a proposal or an action plan or gathering information, everybody state your number. How certain are you? I'm 62% certain here. Then we have something to play with. Then we can say, we make decisions here at 80% certainty. What would we need to see or know or hear in order to reach 80% or go lower and make a different decision? Numbers can take the sting out of opinions.
I like that very much. So let's move on to some vocabulary. We've talked a lot about the word volatile or volatile, and you may notice that there are several ways to pronounce certain words in English. In North America, we would say controversy. In the UK, they say controversy. So there are examples of syllable stress changes and also vowel changes, like in volatile. So both are correct. It's like either, either, neither, neither, tomato, tomato. So for the word volatility, I would describe this as rapid, unpredictable change. It could be in politics, it could be in the environment, it could be in the stock market. It's change that's hard to anticipate or control.
So it comes from the word to fly, right? Volar, volare. And the idea was that there were things that just started flying. Volatile originally was from chemistry. Volatile substances would evaporate very quickly. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like not just changing, but changing state and escaping.
Okay. And then the second term is contingency plan. A contingency plan is usually some kind of a prepared alternative if the main plan fails. So I wouldn't say it's a backup plan necessarily, because that phrase suggests that the second option is inferior or not as good as the first. A contingency plan is proactive and not reactive. So for example, if I said something like, we activated the contingency plan when the supplier dropped out 2 weeks before launch. So we had to do something because our supplier was gone.
The idea of contingency plans, it comes from military. And based on the lived experience that no plan survives contact with reality, right? That's kind of a military aphorism.
Mm-hmm.
Said more colorfully by former U.S. boxer Mike Tyson, everyone's got a plan until they get punched in the face.
Right.
So the idea of having contingency plans is not to lower your confidence in the main plan, it's to increase it.
Mm-hmm.
That this is a big conversation in the mindset space around, okay, Sean, you've decided you're going to eat a certain way. You're going to be very, very strict, but you know you're going out to a restaurant. And if I'm your coach and I say to you, well, do you have a backup plan? You might say, I don't want a backup plan because I'm committed to this. And I might say, great, be committed to that. And I still have a backup plan. There's debate about whether a contingency plan means you're not fully committed to your main plan. And I tend to argue that a contingency plan signals your commitment.
Yes.
While acknowledging that life can change.
Well said.
My list has the word trade-off,
mm-hmm.
right? A trade-off, it's a noun. Okay. What it means is you get something and you give something up. It's a compromise in a sense. Getting something requires giving something. And so then the question becomes, is the trade-off worth it? So what are some things that our tactical listeners can practice this week?
Yeah, three things. I think number one, learn the three-frame structure that I talked about a little bit earlier. When someone asks you about an uncertain situation, use this simple structure. What we know, what we don't know, what we're doing next. Three parts, usually in that order. And for number two, I think check your uncertain words before your next important conversation or meeting. Write down three things you need to say, and then look at every sentence and count the uncertain words, like perhaps, maybe, I think, possibly, kind of. Each one of these words makes you sound less confident. So you don't need to remove all of them, but every word that isn't really necessary is hurting your credibility.
You know, what comes to me there is the tool that you introduced me to, voice notes,
uh-huh.
is to make your notes and then practice speaking and then ask voice notes to highlight all of the hedge words and keep doing it until there are none left.
Another use case for voice notes or similar AI note-taking apps is to measure your progress over time. It's a great tool for measuring how far you've come as well. Anyway, my third point here was practice contingency language out loud. This is a specific exercise. Think of a real situation you're dealing with right now. It could be a project, a negotiation, a decision where you don't have all the information. Then say this out loud. If X happens, we'll do Y. If Z happens instead, we'll do W. Say it out loud three times, four times. Hear yourself being prepared. I think most professionals practice their main idea, but they often forget to practice the contingency language. So when somebody actually challenges them, when somebody says something like, what happens if this doesn't work? Sometimes people struggle to have an answer to that very quickly. So Howie, there's a certain kind of leader who resists exactly this kind of structured language. I've worked with a few of them myself. And these are people who just trust their gut or they trust their instincts. They like to say things like, oh, I've always communicated this way. So what's the psychological pattern behind that resistance? And what does it actually cost them, if anything?
Well, it may not cost them anything. Their instincts might be completely correct. But when I hear that question, I think about me playing paddle in Spain. It's this game with a fiberglass small paddle with little holes in it, a deflated tennis ball, and a small court with chain link fence in some areas and glass in some areas. And I've played paddle sports and racket sports my whole life. I grew up playing paddle ball, racket ball, tennis, squash. I was good at all of those. And I immediately walked on the paddle court and was better than 50% of the people here. And because of that, I am always going to be worse than the other 50% because taking lessons and learning requires becoming worse. So in any organization or in any individual, a change that requires changing in habits is like getting the flu. It's like getting sick. It actually lowers your capacity. So I took four paddle lessons And all of a sudden, I found I couldn't hit the shots I was hitting before. I wasn't in position the way I was because I was worse because now I was a beginner at something new. I think it's very natural for all of us to want to ego protect what got us here. One of my mentors, Marshall Goldsmith, wrote a book called What Got You Here Won't Get You There. So at that point, it's not just your language, it's you may have been the best forensic accountant in the firm, and now you have to become a beginner leader of forensic accountants, and you just keep wanting to do the old work, right? So there are many situations where we have to say, you know, what do I want? What kind of impact do I want? What kind of future do I want? And to decide to make that trade-off between discomfort now and the expertise and the skill on the other side of that discomfort.
In a volatile world, clarity is your competitive advantage. Not certainty, clarity. You don't need all the answers. You need a structure that tells the room you've thought about the right questions.
The leader who gets energized by this uncertainty is very different than the one who gets overwhelmed by it. And even if the next step is simply saying, let's go find out what we can and make our best plan based on that limited information, you can still say that with clarity, with confidence, and by so doing, include your team and make them part of the solution rather than bystanders to a scary problem. Anyone who wants to work on their English communication and accent clarity, they should book a free discovery call with you, Sean.
And if you want to work on leadership communication or mindset, book a free discovery call with Howie. Links are in the description and show notes. Until next time, keep it clear, keep it confident, and keep it human.
See you on the Fluent Edge.